it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. Hello and welcome to Happy Place with me, Fern Cotton. Today, a big bumper episode for you. Not one, not two, but three gorgeous guests. I'm chatting to Gary Barlow, Mark Owen and Howard Donald, otherwise known as Take That.
The music saved me over the years. It did. It was my answer in the years that I wasn't doing music to get back to it. It was my answer to not make me focus on fame, and because the music, and I believe that with anything, if the sole skill of what you do, if you let that skill go and concentrate on something else that was a partner to that skill, I think you get lost and you need to go back to the skill. The reason why people first noticed you or discovered you, why was that? It's because I'm a singer and a songwriter. And if you keep going back to that well, I think that's where the health comes from.
I don't think I really need to introduce Take That to you, really. But just in case, Take That formed as a five-piece band in 1989 and were quite honestly an immediate success. Their first two albums charted at number two and number one, respectively. The band split in 1996, but for the last 18 years or so, Take That have been regrouping to make music and tour together. Robbie Williams returned for 2011's Progress Tour that saw them break UK records for the fastest selling album of the 21st century and the fastest selling tour of all time. It's madness. Now, Gary, Mark and Howard have released a new single that I'm obsessed with called Windows and are set to play 29 dates across 15 cities around the UK and Ireland in 2024. And they're obviously known for their huge live show productions, so I can't even begin to imagine what they're dreaming up for this one. If you're not already in love with Take That, I think you really will be by the end of this chat. The guys were the most fun to hang out with. In fact, there was so much gorgeous energy in the room that they sort of gatecrashed the beginning of the chat. There was no proper start to this chat, as you'll hear. So absolutely no time for me to do an official hello.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Okay, Take That coming up in just a moment. Oh my God. But first, a little bit of news. Happy Place Festival is back in 2024. Get in. We'll be back at Chiswick House and Gardens on Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of July, and in Tatton Park on Saturday the 31st of August and Sunday the 1st of September. Early bird tickets at 2023 prices are on sale now until Friday the 20th of October. Ticket links and more information can be found at happyplaceofficial.co.uk/festival. Oh, I can't wait to see you all there next summer. All right, here's the show.
Do you do a lot of these with groups, or is it many individuals?
This is the biggest group I've had on the podcast in real life.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I've had three people for an interview on Zoom, but in real life, This is the first for Happy Place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that.
I'm glad it's you.
We were looking for the first.
Always.
Yeah, here we are.
Super competitive, Gary.
Oh, yeah. Always. Yeah.
I mean, you have been on, Gary, in 2018, which was lovely to chat to you then. But it's really good to have all three of you here today to chat about a whole ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. First of all, I messaged you the other night. Windows is a right tune.
Oh, thank you.
Come on. Thank you. That song. That is amazing.
Yeah, we're happy. We're
bet
happy.
You are.
Yeah.
It's got a really strong melody. You've got strings, you've got live guitars in there. It sounds quite 70s. What were your sort of initial thoughts starting out with this project?
Well, it started actually with something Mark said to me. He said, what we've got to imagine with that, we knew at this point we were going to do BST this year. So it's obviously, we'd played BST before. So he said, imagine walking out onto the stage, we wave, and then we strike into the song. What is that song?
Oh, I like that.
And I thought, oh, that's an interesting one. Mm. And so I went off and started beavering away a bit, and then you came round one afternoon, didn't you? And what's happened throughout this record we've done is each of us have brought something in. It could be two lines, or it could be a 90% finished song. But we've done it individually, and I found Windows early and heard it and got mad. I said, just check this out, see what you think. And he was like, I can see it now, the sun's setting. And interestingly, we didn't end up doing it at BST, did we, in the end?
No, we almost did. And we dropped it about 3 hours before.
We just thought it was too early.
Oh, right.
However, we got a bit nervous.
But it's
well.
One of those songs that you instantly, you hear it and you go, I know this song. And you don't know it, but it's got that beautiful, familiar melody about it. It's like an instant sing-along. Yeah. So
I
good.
Think it's not only an instant sing-along, it's actually, because obviously we've been through the process of recording it and doing the video to it, hearing it lots and lots of times, and it's one of those songs I don't seem to get sick of, you know?
No.
Keep wanting to sing it. It's a real sing-along song.
I think for me, that drew me in immediately to this song was hearing Gary's voice on it, because I'd not heard him sing like that for, and I know it's like a ridiculous thing because I've known him for 30-odd years and heard him sing many songs, but the way he was delivering that song and the sort of the tone and I don't know how you'd say it, but it felt new, even though I'd known him for a long time. I was like, oh my God, who's that? Who's that guy?
Keep going.
Yeah.
You've got 5 minutes to fill.
Actually, it was really exciting. And so it wasn't just a song, it was the drive behind this record, I think, for us. Is what I'm trying to say is that there was a determination. Like, because we'd had a gap, it didn't feel like we were sort of tiring out and winding down. It felt like we were coming back with this new energy. Mm. And he just told me about the breath work you've been doing with your friend. So I don't
know. Richie Norton, yeah.
Richie.
Yeah, it's got you to that. What was that high note in Windows right at the start?
It is high. It is. Especially as we're looking to next week at some live performances. It's like, it's like A's. It's high up there.
Slightly regretting that now.
Very much so.
When you have a song like Windows land in your head, what is that? Is that a download? Where are you getting that from? Do these songs end up sort of fully formed, entering your mind? How does that work? I'm so interested in that process.
Oh, it's such a funny one. Songs arriving. And often for me, it's never just a melody. I can hear everything. I can hear the strings, how the drums should sound. I can hear a lot of things when melodies come. Actually, there's a few different feelings. The first is, bloody hell, this is good. This could be something. Then versus, thank God for that, we've got a single. Mm-hmm. A lot of things could, because it's more than just writing music for fun. It's writing music knowing everyone else is writing music, knowing we're on a new label now. We've got a goal to aim for the end of next year. So all that relief comes, and then I think the songwriter takes over, and then you set to work on crafting this tiny piece you've got. And I guess then it becomes the experience you've had over the years. But they do just land. I don't know where these things come from. I don't know. It depends on the day of the week or what you're looking at or which country you're in. But they do, thank goodness, keep landing.
It's interesting that you feel relief, because most would assume, you're Gary Barlow, these songs are always going to be there. But do you have that feeling like, what if I can't write a classic again? What if there isn't another big song?
I think that every time I sit at a piano, really? To be honest. And I do also, the one thing I did learn over the years was I don't write 12 songs now and then don't write until the next album starts. I write nearly every day. If I'm in the studio, I try and write because it's like a muscle, songwriting is. It's really like if you don't sing for 12 months, your voice is not going to be as good. You've got to keep working that muscle. It's healthy. It's healthy. And I also, beyond that, actually, I have tailored my life in the recent years to also add to that skill of songwriting. I read a lot, and make sure there's plenty of downtime in the day where I actually get to relax. I work out. I do all the things we love to do to keep my mind healthy and ready for when it's needed. When something like that lands and you go, right, I need to work on this now, I'm in a healthy place to do that.
Yeah, so important. And was there sort of an active rebellion in terms of making sure this album had loads of live strings and live guitars and piano on there, considering so much of today's music is made digitally on a screen and you can replicate any instrument you want, any vocal you want? Did you want to get back to basics?
I wouldn't say it was...
Not a plan, not really, a plan. That, was it?
No. I think the song told us where we were going. You know, we're very fortunate. We've worked with some of the greatest producers, you know, in the world, Stuart Price, you know, John Shanks. They're all amazing producers. But when Windows came along, and maybe it was the new label as well, and the sound of that song, it made us think a little bit differently. We've got a new label, EMI Thomas at EMI Records. He came in with a load of fresh ideas.
Names of
people who thought it'd be good. And so it was exciting for us to try to do something different. And a name that came up quite a lot in conversation in a gentleman from Savannah, he's called Dave Cobb, he's an American producer. And he'd come up in a few chats we'd had, and we'd all heard bits of records that he had done. But basically we went out into Nashville in January last year, wasn't it? We turned up there. It was freezing.
A meeting, really.
We had 3 days, but we turned up there. We'd never met him. Never really spoke to him apart from saying, see you on Friday.
Yeah.
We turned up there with a few songs, like a cassette, not a cassette. Actually, it might have been a cassette. Played him a few songs. He had a band there, and we were literally just straight from the tape player into the room with the band, and it was at RCA Victor Studio B, which is like, I know this is probably a bit boring for listeners, but it's like the best studio. It's where Elvis recorded so
200
many
songs.
Wow.
Dolly Parton recorded there, the Everly Brothers.
Buddy Holly.
The room was amazing. And it was just, we didn't even get a chance to sort of say hello, like put our coat up. Before we knew it, we were in and they were recording the song, and it was just, we were just like, we're in, we're
yeah.
off.
Yeah. There's magic in rooms like that, isn't there? Whenever I go to Abbey Road, you can feel it in the room, the energy of it is so cool. And how is it making an album? I mean, you've made a ton of music over the years together and off as solo artists. How does it differ to when you first started out in the 90s? And I mean that in an emotional sense, because I can even look back at the start of my career in the 90s and I was healthily naive, super confident, had all my goals in sight, nothing was going to stop me. I personally think that gets harder as you get older. That confidence is slightly more fragile. You're certainly not naive. You know what the pitfalls are and where things can go wrong. Have you experienced a sort of similar journey in terms of how you emotionally approach making music?
Yeah, I guess if you go back to the 90s, obviously when the band was formed, it was, you know, Gary was obviously the songwriter of the 90s, and we didn't really write anything in the 90s, which worked perfectly because Gary had the ammunition basically for the group to work, which was perfect. And, you know, and then when we obviously disappeared for 9 years, and then we came back and we decided that from now on, for us all to be, you know, happy in our own world, I'd take that, you know, we'll all start contributing to the writing of everything. So, and it's really worked, and it's actually made me, and I guess individually, it's made us all feel like we are really part of the album, even though we sung on all the songs in the 90s and we had our little say on some of the songs. But it's you know, now we're all writing together, it feels like we're in a great place, in a creative place, and it's a, yeah, happy place.
Oh,
see that?
What an ending. Perfect. That's not it. The end of the podcast, but yeah. That's been a great ending. Yeah.
Yeah. Save it for later, that same thing.
We'll cut it around. Yeah, yeah. Chop it up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I heard you on my friend Jake's podcast, Gary, on high performance, yeah. and you were saying that you were the leader back then and you wanted to control things. How has that been to sort of let go in certain areas and ensure that everyone, like the dynamic has changed over the years?
Well, it happened very, very early that did, because when we all came back, and this goes back to the question you asked previously, I think, a bit as well, when we all stood in a room, when we were doing that reunion thing, it just all sort of happened. There was no big plan. It was more or less like we were just landed in a room. We were all just sort of looking at each other. Most of us hadn't done anything for 10 years. I hadn't sung for about 5 or 6 years, not even in my own studio. I'd really turned my back on performing. And I remember us all looking at one another, and we were not a band. We weren't, but we'd been a band. But we were not a band at that point. And I think that we then experienced this whole thing of tour tickets going on sale, doing this massive tour. We felt the love of the people again. And I think once it was clear that we should try and do something new, not just trade off our back catalogue, how is that going to look as adults now, not as these young guys from the 90s? How does that look as adults? And I think that for me, the reason I'm here today and the reason I go and sing on later next week or whatever is because I've started this process with the music, the idea, the lyric, that, and it means so much to me. So the idea that everyone could feel that and feel part of this group was really the only way to make this work second time round. And you can list the songs, the reasons why we came back so big, but I believe that feeling was really the fire underneath that whole thing of why we all worked so hard on a tour. What the music, if you can get yourself into that music, there's nothing you'll ever be more passionate about in your life as to telling people and singing it to people. And I believe that was really the start of Take That, the band, this time round.
I think it also took pressure off Gary as well. You know, Gary was so responsible of coming up with the next hit single in the 90s, and he was always in the studio, whereas we wasn't in the studio until it came to singing the song. So the fact that now we were all like became co-writers and writers of the song, it meant that Gary could obviously have more freedom to do whatever he wanted to do and actually sit back and listen to the songs that we were writing rather than being so intensely writing songs for Take That.
Mm. Excuse you. Like a nice frog in your throat at the wrong time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you know, last year I was doing a show where it was mostly talking.
Oh,
and at one point I had to take a drink of something. And I always worried about that happening.
Oh my God,
you
it's
know where you
awful.
Take a drink?
I've had it so many times.
And it takes about half an hour for it to go.
So my worst one was live on Radio 1. I was interviewing Bruno Mars. He's an interesting character. And I had that so bad. And I got a coughing fit. And I had to hand him the script, like a sheet of paper, and just point. And he had to link into the song. It was awful.
Oh, God.
Nothing's worse than that.
Oh, God.
What do you think, looking at... You've stuck around for a long time, 33 odd years is pretty much unheard of. And we know the bands that have stuck around, like the Foo Fighters, like the Stones. Why do you think it is? Do you think friendship has to be there as a foundation?
I'm not sure, because I know lots of unhappy bands who are still around.
Yep, I guess.
Bands are tricky.
Yeah.
They are tricky. I think we're lucky. I mean, I've known these guys longer than I've known my wife.
Mm.
You know, we have a long... And I think often when people who are new to our fold come around us, they listen to us talk to one another and they say, is everything all right? And I was like, no, don't worry. We know each other really well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's tricky for us now to sort of ever offend one another. We know each other so well. And this is a happy version of us right now. I mean, we're you know, I feel like, especially, I don't want to single you out, but I've enjoyed watching Howard's on this particular album, actually. I feel like he's written and done his best performance I've ever heard on this album. So to see us going, doing things that are surpassing what we've done in the past, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant.
I feel like I've just got started. It's a really weird feeling. I feel like I've had the freedom. I think a lot of the freedom has been taken up from the past through having young children.
Yeah.
And me putting my family first, you know, over take that, which I guess is what everyone does anyway now. But back in the 90s, that's all we knew. You know, that's all we wanted to do. And, you know, even girlfriends, or no one was married, no one had children. So all we wanted to do was be and take that. So back then, we didn't really have the connection with each other and the friendship than what we do now. And I think maybe a lot of it is down to actually having children and actually understanding each other's situations. And, you know, there's nothing better than getting in a room and talking about a situation. Mm. And that's what we have always done. We've always talked about stuff. And whether a problem arises, we always talk about it rather than sweeping it under the carpet. We never even had time back in the 90s to even address anything like that. And now we do. And not only is it a friendship, but I think in that 9 years, we had the gap where we wasn't doing anything. I think we were very lucky that the songs that Gary wrote, they had a real life. You know, and they were played on the radio all the time. So then when we came back, people knew our songs. So,
and it's so lovely that you feel like you're just getting started, because I think a big problem with a lot of bands or artists who have been around for a long time, they do get jaded. They do get bored of doing the cycle of record, promotion, touring, and they become maybe complacent or not as grateful. But it feels like you guys have that fire in your belly. Why do you think that is? Why have you all stuck with that feeling of, yeah, we're just getting started, there's more to get done? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we again, it's besides not feeling, you know, I feel like my creativity personally is I've just started letting out my creativity. Someone else answers, I'm lost. Yeah, I'm lost.
Get that coffee down.
I was going somewhere. Maybe I've had too much coffee today. That's what it is. But I think, no, go on.
We are like-minded. We are like-minded. We're very, you know, we come off stage having played in front of 1,000 people and start planning what's coming next. And, you know, we're ambitious still. The music, I have to always come back to the music. You can make all the plans in the world, but if your music's not right and it's not making you excited and each other excited, you don't have anything. And we're serious about that. That's the bit we have to get right. And so we put a lot of time into that. And it's rewarding when it is right.
Yeah. And I think basic things like, you know, your mum say, when are you going back on tour? You know, are you writing any, are you doing any more? You know, it's basic like that, that family and friends say, oh, when are you guys going back out on the road? And you're like, I better call them and see when we're going back out. Better do something.
Yeah. I haven't seen you on Top of the Pops for a while.
Exactly.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
That's gone.
But it,
actually,
it's
I think
true.
It's still on. Is it at Christmas, maybe? I don't know. Yeah.
It's true, though. You know, people enjoy. I mean, it's part of my life. So I think I was 17 when we started off, and it's literally part of my life. So when I'm not doing it, I like having a break from it, but I miss it when I'm not. So after a while, a break becomes a bit like something's not quite working, or it's like, I can't find my shoe, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, so there's a real comfort in being around the band, you know, whichever form of that band it is, whether it's 3, 4, 5, you know, I like being around. And it's not just the three of us as well. It's people around us, our musicians, the producers. It's nice to be a part of, as an energy of creativity, as you know. It's nice being around other people who are doing things of a similar sort of nature, so that you can chat about things and you can enjoy that space. And, you know, I like working. I love my job and I like working. I love the lads. I love the people that we work with. And so I miss it when I'm not doing it. So that's what keeps me going.
We have all been
somewhere where the three of us anyway have been at a time when we haven't been out, like, we wanted to do interviews, but nobody wanted to interview us. So we know the other side.
The feeling of,
and so if, to be on this side is better. Feels nicer, you know, to be able to go, oh, we're going out on tour, or we're making a new record, is better than going, I can't get a record deal. There's, you know, there's no gigs to play. So it's, we've seen both sides of it. So I think that that makes us super, super grateful every day to be able to do this, but also really enjoy it and just enjoy the company and the challenge. It's challenging. It's challenging to go, okay, we're going to come back. We've got to make a new record. What's that going to sound like? But it's great having those conversations, but it's challenging as well. And we enjoy, you know, we're now putting it together a tour. It's like we've done some great tours. We've done the biggest tours ever, you know, the biggest show. So how are we going to do it now? Now we're just having the conversation about that is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, really.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's such a weird industry, isn't it? Your side of it, my side of it. Yeah. I think all of us kind of tread very carefully going, oh, my God, it could all end. You just don't know what's going to happen next. And I think if you're not grateful and diligent, that's where it all starts to go wrong. I feel exactly this. Every time I get to do a podcast, I'm like, grateful, bloody brilliant that I get to sit and do this and this meet is my people. Job. And meet people and enjoy it. I would never take that for granted.
No.
Could you see yourselves, like the Stones, working in this industry, in some ways, on stage, still doing your thing down the line? In your 70s, 80s.
And the differences between us and them, obviously they're full on playing instruments and, you know, obviously Mick Jagger's doing his singing, but, and I think maybe that maybe has more of a longevity, maybe this is just in my head, more of a longevity than what we would as a pop band who are known for as a vocal group and a performing group and a dancing group. But, you know, I don't know. I would like to think so, but although I am dreading the big 60, which is not another
next year.
It's not till another five years.
You know, it's quite nice. He hits it first, so we get to test it with him.
Exactly.
When he's the oldest. So he hits it first, and then we go, "How's he doing?
How is it?
Yeah.
How is it?"
And if he looks like he's struggling, we'll just stop.
Yeah, but if someone had told you guys in the '90s that you'd be releasing albums and this excited Incredible. About to go on tour, you wouldn't have believed it.
No.
So who knows?
Sixty's
going to be fine, Howard.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
I hope so.
It's going to be all right.
You're nearly 60 already.
I'm 55. Five years away.
That's miles. 80s. Miles away.
You know, I'd like to believe we are because obviously we're very conscious about our health and what we do with our bodies. And we know now that, you know, what used to be a 10-minute warm-up in the 90s is now 10 hours warm-up, you know. And it's also,
I'm laughing because I know.
Yeah.
It's also, it's harder.
And now it's a post warm-up, you know, post warm-down.
Warm-down.
And the magnesium bath.
This isn't me, by the way.
It's a lot of
that. Oh, no,
a lot of vitamin.
the
little vitamin thing, it gets longer and bigger as you're getting older, different times.
I'd like to think we have longevity because of that reason of keeping ourselves in shape.
Yeah.
Not only for the band, but obviously for our own kids as well, you know.
Yeah. Takes a lot of time, but it's worth it. Yeah.
But it's mentally really great for you as well to be doing stuff. And I think that I heard you say yesterday, I think it was I don't know what we were talking about, but you were talking about doing the gym, and you were saying, I don't just do it for the guns. But
he
didn't say the word guns.
I think you said,
I don't necessarily do it for the muscle, I do it for the mind.
That's it.
He did mention about his butt muscles as well.
You know what? Cut it now. Cut it.
Gary's guns. Whatever next?
You know what? I swear on my life.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
How, over the years, have you coped with fame? Because that is a really strange subject matter to get onto. And it's something that we've talked about on the podcast before. There's still huge myths out there about what fame means and what it is and what it brings you. I think the reality is it can be useful in terms of keeping up what you're doing and having the opportunities. But actually, I think the downsides often outweigh the positive. How have you found it, and who do you think's cope the best with being in the spotlight, being scrutinised?
That's a difficult one, that. Yeah. But, I struggle with fame. I really do. I struggle with fame. I don't know. Sometimes I think that I'm not really worth it. I don't think it's a weird feeling that, you know, three of us got out of the car the other day and that there's people waiting for us. And I felt like I was almost saying to myself, I wonder whether anyone wants to see me. I don't know. It's really sad that, isn't it? But I sometimes feel that I'm not worth it about being in the band. You know what I mean? I don't know why. It's a really strange feeling. And I do go through different motions of yes, I feel confident and I feel great, but there's a lot of time where I don't feel great about it, you know, and I don't feel like I'm ready for it. I'm ready for being thrust into the spotlight, being thrust in on the tour. And, you know, because when I'm on tour and we get used to it, I can almost blank myself out that people are actually even in the crowd. You know, so that's what helps me cope with it, to actually, you know, the adoration or whatever you want to call it. It's a really weird thing. And, you know, when you're out, I'm to be honest with you, if I go to the supermarket, I can quite easily keep my head down. But some days, but a lot of the days I put my head up and I don't care what anyone thinks. You know, it's like, just get on with it. Anyone asks me, you know.
I think it's extremely normal what you're saying, because I think you look around and assume, you know, whether we're talking about fame or not, but you look around with your friends, your peers, your family, and you assume everyone else is coping here. Everyone else is coping okay. And everyone else is maybe feels like they're worthy of fame. I'm not sure many people do. I think people are just good at pretending they feel comfortable with it, or that they feel like they deserve it, that it's warranted. It is, if you look at what you guys do, it's utterly bizarre, you know, to have tens of thousands of people, you know, knowing a lot about you and screaming your names. That's not a normal thing to experience. So I think what you've just described is probably how most people, sat there nodding going, I hear you. I totally hear you. I get it.
You do look at people thinking, oh, they're so full of confidence and they're on the stage by themselves. But you don't really know what goes on behind closed doors, what front they are really putting on for them to be on that stage. Mm-hmm. Must be quite frightening for people who are actually hiding it. You know?
Yeah, and I think you probably just get good at, you know, wearing the mask, don't you? And getting out there and making sure that you look like you're confident. And like you say, there's times when you do feel it, and that's probably more to do with the music and the creativity, and you're detaching from that. But I don't think there's many people that like, I'm famous and I feel great being famous and it feels really natural. There are a few.
That's why I also feel sorry for those people on talent shows, you know, when they get thrust into the limelight, they do these talent shows and they win, and then all of a sudden they're in clubs and they've got bottles of champagne and they're almost told this dream of that they're going to be, you know, they've got an album deal or they're going to be famous for the rest of their life, and then the year after, they're not even heard of. It's like, I feel so sorry for them in a way, you know, because they think they've got this, even like some of the boy groups that were around in the 90s that never did as well as us, and then you see people coming back on these thrown together, made up programs of 90s groups reforming with each other. And I think, God, imagine what I would feel like if I was actually in that position. But maybe I wouldn't feel like them because I haven't tasted the fame that we've had, you know, or the success.
Mm. So it's a cruel one, isn't it? The whole industry can be extremely harsh and difficult. And that level of scrutiny as well, I think, that's something that is extremely hard to get used to, whether it's having newspapers dig around in your life or articles written about you where you do feel totally out of control. It's a really big, nasty beast. And there's also, of course, the online side of it as well, which we're all having to navigate. And it is incredibly difficult and it's an incredibly sensitive area. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you're saying, not saying online, that is becoming more and more heightened. And I know, Howard, this is something that you've had a bit of trouble with this year and something that has caused you a lot of stress, actually.
I did. And you know what? I meant what I said at the time when I apologised for it. And I was very sorry to anyone that was offended. Those tweets are like, don't reflect the person I am. And I'm all about love and positivity and being inclusive. And I just want people to be who they want to be, basically.
Yeah. No, it's the whole online thing. It's a very it's a treacherous place. And we're all, you know, and it's, again, looking back at when you first started out, there were no phones at gigs. There weren't people filming your performance. Mm-hmm. People were sort of dancing. Now everyone stood still with a phone up. You know, there was no Instagram, no TikTok. It is a totally different beast. How do you find that side of it, incorporating the sort of digital thing alongside the bit you've always done?
I like telling people, oh, it was good in our day when we didn't have phones, and back in our day. I don't even think it's just for people who are sort of famous. I think just generally, you know, I've you know, got kids and children and trying to work out, oh, when, you know, when does my youngest daughter get a phone? You know,
I'm in that one now. Yeah. Like when,
how do you do that? Sort of trying to parent. And I think Howard was touching on it earlier, you know, trying to parent your and do a good job at parenting, but at the same time, you know, try and do your work and trying to find that balance, I think, between in life and the different sort of things that come along. You know, my kids are better than me on social media. They're quicker at it. They know what they're doing. I go to them for, oh, how do I do this? And they're like, oh, it's so easy. Just do this. Mm. And they set me up like Pinterest. Like, they're like, oh, I'll Pinterest. I'm like, Pinterest? What's Pinterest?
What's this one now?
Another new one.
It was great in our day when those things weren't around, and you know, even just sat around a table. Like, I sit down with my wife Emma and we sat at the table, and like everybody's sort of on the phones and like just trying to have a conversation sometimes can be, you know, tricky. And we're like, okay, everybody put the phones down.
I tell you who's the worst. My parents, when I go after my parents, they're in the pub on their phone. I'm like, all right, pair of teenagers, get off your phone. But we're all addicted to a level, and we've all got to try and work
it's
out.
It's quite sad in a way, really.
It is.
Because we make a ban. If we eat at the table, we make a ban and no phones are allowed even on the table.
Yeah,
I'm quite lucky. My eyes are fading, so I can't see. My arm can't go far enough away now.
It's the vitamins, it's the eyes.
He's got one of those selfies. He's got one of those selfie sticks.
Do you know what, though?
He
did a commercial for Specsavers, and I thought, I'm going to get some free glasses here. Never once did he say. I've been mentioning him for at least 2 years that I can't quite see.
Borrowing my glasses.
I've been waiting to say you can.
And have the eye test. Just give
have
in.
Have an eye test.
You're doing your eyes more damage by not putting glasses on.
I quite like, you know,
the drama of it.
The drama. Yeah.
No, and just having a nice sort of romantic blur to life.
I quite like it.
Likes a 50s flair.
I really like a flair.
So look, you've got your tour coming up. I saw that you announced this on Instagram this week. This is hugely exciting. I've seen many of your tours and they are getting bigger. I don't know how. Mm. The production level is just out of this world. How can you keep upping it? What is next?
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
Oh, we haven't worked that out yet.
No, haven't really. No,
okay.
No. I think we're going to get Pinterest.
Yeah, I think when we do a tour plan, you know, obviously things have to be, I think even sometimes up to 14, 16 months ahead to even book the venues before anyone else gets it. And then you have to do the stage design because that site takes 8 to 12 months to even make.
Get it built.
And then once all that's in place, which is
We've got to get it out.
A couple of 6-inch nails.
We've got to build it and then we've got to get it built.
Got to hire a van. Got to get a van.
Wheels.
Get your high vis.
See if there's a driver.
So as I was saying,
Howard.
You know, obviously it takes a lot of time and you have to be well ahead in planning, and as that's being made, then we can sort of get our heads together, which we always do. Either you know, sometimes we've been off to Vegas or different places, hotel rooms, coming up with ideas of different songs, and that's where the fun really begins. And I think going back to the album is when we are actually creating songs and albums, you know, we actually have our imagination is towards the tour as well. When you're actually creating a song, how does this sound in an arena or a stadium? What's it going to look like? How the crowd? You know, it's like sometimes when I DJ, I'm downloading.
I knew it. It's so cool.
Plug it in.
Tell them when your gig is. Go on
tonight.
No, but when you download a song, when you listen to it and you listen to it headphones, you actually visualize. How does this go down with the crowd? And it's exactly the same. Take that. You imagine when you're writing the song, how is this going to go down? How is this going to be performed?
how are the crowd going to be? And if you get a really good feeling about it, I think you're in the right place.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big tour. You always do big tours. It's a lot of dates. It's a lot of travelling. Huge, huge venues. All of the stuff you've got to cognitively deal with, you know, looking out to a crowd and wondering what the hell's going on and trying to process that.
I'm trying
that
to see them.
You're trying to see them without your glasses on. Then you've got to try and sleep after and you're on a huge high. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster. It's a physical roller coaster. It's a mental roller coaster. What do you do individually to ensure that you're ready for this? And it's not just about going to the gym, making sure you're fit and you can do the show. There's all the other stuff that comes mentally with it. So what do you do to prep for that?
Right, so for me...
Yeah, because life runs alongside all these things.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that. For me, it starts at home.
Yeah.
Starts at home. You got to get the babysitters into place.
Yeah.
When they're coming on tour, at what point are you going to get your rest by them not being on tour? Mm-hmm. Which is that obviously we're talking about younger kids here. And once that's sorted out, as long as people are happy at home, especially the wife, then obviously things can start kicking off. And then, you know, for your own mental health and your own physical health, you know, and obviously nutrition, you've got to work on it, because obviously back in the 90s, you could burn the candle at both ends when you're young. But now it's a different story. You get an injury, you could be out, or you might have to cancel shows. And that's something we don't want to do to our paying audience.
No.
You know? We feel they deserve to see an amazing show, us in tip-top condition.
Yeah.
And giving it everything that we can possibly give.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's so important to mention, like, getting everything ready at home, because people just sort of, I guess, turn up to the tour and they see you as these sort of machines that are doing your job on stage. But you've got home lives. You've got, everyone's got stuff going on at home, whether it's stuff with the kids or school or whatever's going on. And you need to almost know that that's really, really in place and everything's great and there's that sort of equilibrium. So you can then switch off to get into show mode.
Yeah, it's important.
Correct.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely part of the prep. You know, I mean, we always say there's not a lot of downsides with touring. You know, we wake up at 10:30 in the morning, go for a breakfast together, have a read in the afternoon, go to the venue, have dinner together about 5:30 ahead of the thing, then get ready, go on, have an amazing night. Our audience are always amazing. Get back and start chilling into the evening, you know, glass of red wine, whatever, and go. It's beautiful. But meanwhile, you know, the ship's still running somewhere else. And like Howard said, it's about balancing that off. And it's more definitely than just walking out on a stage.
Yeah.
And as I think as your, for me, I always have like issues with the leaving and the, like, that's the difficult part, is when you're sort of saying back, you know, you're leaving out the door and you know you're going away for some time. Mm. And it's tricky to sort of even prepare yourself. I mean, I guess, as Gaz was saying, the prep starts a lot earlier than that. But it's never easy. It's not easy when you're away, especially if you're away and you know you might be missing like an event, like
somebody's birthday,
or a school assembly. School assembly, and you know that.
It's tricky, and that's not just about being like doing what we do. I guess that's being
everyone.
A parent.
Yeah.
That's everybody. Yeah, it's those times and trying to find the right balance between how you do that. I mean, I'm quite lucky now because mine are getting a little bit older than Howard, so. You know, if I say, oh, do you want to come away for a week? And they sort of know friends and they can hook up with people. And that's the great thing about social media now is they look on Snapchat and they go, oh, I'm in London. And so are 10 of my mates at the same time. So they can all hook up with each other and connect with each other in that way. So that's a great thing. And they quite enjoy the travelling away and doing their thing. So I'm lucky in that regard that... They travel. It's easier for my lot to travel than it is for example, Howard's lot to
You're
travel.
You're in the thick of it, Howard, aren't you? Yeah.
He's got the youngest kids.
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
Yeah. I've found that it's almost easier to keep a level of, like, so we last toured together as a band in 2019. But I've kept a level sort of mentally and physically since then. I haven't it's always harder when you really, like when we did Progress and like there's times when you let it sort of drop and you don't do anything for 6 months and then you try and get up again and it's a little bit harder. So I've found just generally for my general well-being, and this isn't whether we're on tour or not, if I get up in the morning and I go for a run, I have a, you know, and I do this on tour as well, then a cold bath or things like that and little bits of breathing. I love audio books. And so I've just generally found a place where routine really suits me.
Yeah.
Whether that's food, what I eat, lots of water, just general routine. If I know at 4 o'clock I've got to take the dogs, feed the dogs, then take them for a walk around the block, and I'm really good if I do that. And I'm there for 4 o'clock. If I'm 10 minutes late, everything starts to go, oh, I'm off. I'm out of balance, you know. So just trying to find routine helps me personally, and that's at home, on tour. If I'm taking one of the kids in one direction, sometimes another kid will phone and say, can you pick me up in 45 minutes over here? And I can sense my brain starting to go, malfunction.
Yeah. It's taxi cabs.
Well, I can't do it.
What about after tour then? Because if you know, I'm sure you all got this incredible buzz going on from the tour. Not only have you got the show and the fans screaming at you, that is just a natural high, but you're playing your new songs and you're getting a kick out of that. And then you're traveling to a new location. So every day you're waking up and it's a new day and a new exciting thing. When you're back in the routine of everyday life and it might not be quite as exciting and you've got dogs to walk and kids to feed, how do you mentally deal that with is that? Is that a come down or
no,
is
but
it
that
okay?
That is the exciting bit.
Right,
isn't it?
Okay. Seeing them, I love that bit, yeah.
Seeing them grow and what they're doing and finding out that one of them's got interested in cars all of a sudden that's the exciting part of your life because their life is changing and you're growing with them and that you learn about life, I think, again, through your sort of children's eyes. I get a second time to learn about life and that is massively exciting.
Yeah, I think, you know.
Coming off tour, though, is...
Gaz always explains it really well.
Go on, Gary.
Because you literally have everything done for you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He gets home from tea and asks his wife, can I have a go?
Every time. You know, I know she's waiting for it. She's got the line ready for me. And I've come home and I'm, oh, God, it's been 7 months I've been on the road. And you'll ask for anything. Can I just have a tea? You're not on tour now. How long have you been holding that in for?
I knew
she loves saying it. I love it.
I'd
do the same.
You don't get one.
Great.
You don't get one.
Get your own bloody tea.
Yeah.
No, but it is. It's a big gear shift, isn't it? But it seems like family has been really the making of you guys as well, because having had such extreme fame from such a young age, you know, 17 mark, and it wasn't just a bit of fame, it was global success. And you see people, and we've all seen it happen over the years, and even, you know, probably more recently, people that have that level of fame at a young age and go spiraling off the rails, and, you know, you feel desperately sorry and you want to help them because you can see how easy it is for that to happen with just the noise around you and the pressure that's around you. But none of you have done that. Do you think family has been the saving grace?
Yeah, I think in many ways.
I think we're very lucky as well that we are actually a group. We are actually a group of guys and we all, you know, we're all quite level-headed, quite down-to-earth people. And, you know, again, we everything that we do, or if anything is wrong or there is a problem within the band, it's always, you know, we would help each other out. You know, if you see somebody going in that wrong direction, we would help them out. So
family.
Big.
It is, isn't it?
But family isn't just this, like, it's everything around you.
It is having the right people around you. Because again, I think when you see people go down a bad path, it's usually because they've got yes people around them. And I think, you know, you guys know better than anyone, you've got to have that team around you who are going to say when you need it, no, well, that's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Or be able to have that sort of honest dynamic rather than just going yes all the time.
Yeah. And I think in a world...
Nobody ever said yes to us. Especially. It mattered to Gaz, but nobody, to us it was like, no.
It's a good thing.
I love yes.
It feels better than no. Yeah. It really does. Yeah. Your fans are obviously of paramount importance to you, showcased so beautifully in Greatest Days. I loved the film. I loved it so much. I thought it was such an interesting way to use your music, and really unexpected, because most would be expecting a biopic and were sort of waiting for that. Whose idea was it? What was the thinking behind turning the lens on your fans?
I agree. When we first went to see a version of how that would look, and the fact that it was like turning a, because it started as a musical, that whole idea did. And the fact that it turns a mirror on the audience, they think they're coming to watch a show about us, and all of a sudden they realise that's me on stage. Mm. It's very powerful, that. And it's also for us as a band, it's our appreciation to literally say, I know you've been there, we've noticed, we know what's been going on, you know, we're aware you've had a life as well as us. So it was the ultimate love letter to our audience, really, the whole thing was. And from the story itself, a kind of parallel to our friendship too, of how they were, how they came back together, and they were the answer to what that girl was looking for. The answer was right there all along. And then some of it, it strangely touches the milestones of our career, that film does. Yeah.
It's beautiful. And what a cast as well.
Yeah.
Love Jade, love Aisling B.
Aisling,
they're brilliant.
What a absolutely cast.
Brilliant.
It's so cool. It's a beautiful idea.
We have so many beautiful stories of friendships that were formed from the fans. You know, even back in the days of the 90s when there wasn't any, you know, internet. Well, no, but there was internet, but there wasn't any social media where they could contact each other that way. So it was more like
pen pals.
You know what I mean?
Pen pals, beautiful.
Yeah,
I miss that era.
Some of those friendships and how they've people have, you know, songs have gotten through cancer treatment or whatever it may be, and illnesses and. It's amazing to hear. It really is amazing.
Yeah, it must be incredible to look out in that audience when you're leaving a venue and you see people there that have been there from back in the day, since the 90s. That's crazy.
Yeah.
How does it feel to sit here and think, wow, we've been doing this for over 30 years, 33 years? Because there's always this strange paradox where you can look back at an era and go, God, that feels like another lifetime ago. But simultaneously, that was yesterday.
I know, it does. It does in some respects, so especially today. You know, these launch days, I think people just see them and think it's just a new record coming out. It's not. It's like 2 years of our work that's gone into this. And it sort of happens within 10 minutes and people sort of swipe on and then it's on to the next thing. And it's like, no, these are massive things. And today I actually felt that. God, it seems like yesterday we were out on the road doing 6 gigs a day in a Salford Van Eyre van, going up and down the motorway, trying to get a single in the charts, trying to get in a magazine. And it just seemed like yesterday.
Those are the days we used to work hard.
Yeah, it was. But you know what, though? I look nowadays and I think, you know what? No, I wouldn't want to be a new artist now.
No.
I think this industry's changed so much. It's so difficult now. It's so difficult that I'm really glad we're at the point we're at. It just seems like a lot of the focus isn't on the music anymore. It's all the how to do stuff with the music. As I still believe, and going back to a lot of the subjects we've talked about here today, is that the music saved me over the years. It did. It was my answer in the years that I wasn't doing music to get back to it. It was my answer to not make me focus on fame, and because the music. And I believe that with anything, if the sole skill of what you do, if you let that skill go and concentrate on something else that was a partner to that skill, I think you get lost and you need to go back to the skill. The reason why people first noticed you or discovered you, why was that? It's because I'm a singer and a songwriter. And if you keep going back to that well, I think that's where the health comes from. I think that's where the real reason you're here and why you should feel proud getting out of a van and all the rest of it. It's not fame. It's because of that skill that you do, that you go into a dark room and you conjure up this stuff. And that's what you bring into the world. And then everything else, you're not in control of that. Don't try and control it because you can't. And accept it.
Do you want to drop it?
Drop the mic.
Yeah, drop the mic. I like that, what Gary's just said. I've never heard him say that. That's great.
Because it's the power of music. It's a global, it's a universal feeling. And like, you know, you're writing it, you're creating it, and that's saving you, that's keeping you healthy. But it has that beautiful ripple effect where people listening to the music you're writing have that same experience. Mm. It is the best thing ever. You know, I'm not musical at all, but I am addicted.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
To music. Yeah. I love the feeling. Like hearing your new single, when I you know, I messaged you, I put Windows on, and it was that instant euphoria and those melodies, and it does something to you. It's a visceral experience. Yes. And it's unbeatable.
And
unbeatable.
You know, when people talk a lot about AI and it's going to get... You know, I remember when the drum machine came out. Mm. Uh-oh, there goes the drummers. There'll never be a drummer ever again. Oh, they can do samples of orchestras now. That's it. There'll never be orchestras. Forget it. Forget it. Because you know what? That AI can't come up with what I'm going to come up with next. Yep. All it can do is base its prediction on what I've already done. So that's never going to work with music.
No, because it comes from the heart and the soul and the gut. And AI doesn't have that.
And people recognise that. Mm-hmm. So, and people aren't stupid.
No.
So,
they're not. AI can triumph. Do one.
Yes. Do one AI.
Do one AI.
Whoever you are.
Exactly, you evil, sinister, mysterious entity. Well, look, take that. You have opened my windows today. That sounds rude now I've said it out loud, but it didn't when I wrote it in my notepad. But thank you. It's been an absolute joy. And I'm so excited to hear the rest of the new album. And good luck on your tour.
Well, after the success of this show the last time I was on, who knows where you're going to go next?
Who knows, Gary?
Brilliant. Well done. Congratulations. Lovely to see you.
Thank you. Great. Guys. What a mic drop moment to end on from Gary there. In fact, I need to say a thank you to all three of the guys for being just so warm and really raw, actually, and thoughtful. I thought it was, you know, not only a lot of fun, but very poignant too. It was just very special to sort of understand more about what makes them all tick behind the scenes. Take That's new album, This Life, is out on November the 24th, and tickets for the 2024 tour are on sale now. I would snap them up immediately if I were you. Now, what did you take away from that chat? Do you feel like maybe you know Gary, Mark and Howard a little bit better? Come and tell us over on Instagram. We are found at Happy Place Official. All right, back next week. A massive thank you again to Take That, to the producers of this episode, Sophie King and Anushka Tate at Rethink Audio, and to you beauties. I love you.